Every woman knows the feeling. That quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot. The moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home. That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you, because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.
Hey everybody, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you very, very much for taking the time to listen today. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out to Jeff at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. All right, everyone. Well, today we are going to be talking about one of the most exciting things in beekeeping. And it's exciting because if you're brand new and you're just starting out and you have spent months and months preparing, you're buying all your hardware, you're checking out your gear, you're like showing your significant other or friends in the neighborhood, you're going, hey, check me out in my new bee suit, right? So you're pretty pumped up and you're ready to do what you got to do. And now it's real. Now you are going to have bees. And whether you're doing great from day one or not, you are officially going to be a beekeeper. We just have one tiny little problem. We've got to get the bees from however you got them, whether it's a package or a nuke, and we got to get them into your beehives. So today we're going to talk a little bit about what differentiates very briefly, because we've done this, you know, in the past, but we're going to briefly talk about what's different between a package of bees and a nuke or nucleus colony. And then we're going to jump in and talk about some install strategies and a couple notes here and there. Now, I've installed some to kind of reestablish the home apiary. I haven't had bees at my house in a few years, and I was supposed to have them last year. Long story, that didn't work out. But we've got them back here at the house again. I've got at least an hour, hour and a half of video installing, going through the process in great detail. I was kind of waiting for a rainy day to hang out in the house and do all the editing. And we had a whole lot of rain last night and some thunderstorms and all that. But we did not get that kind of daytime rain where there's really nothing else you can do. So I will just have to carve out a little bit of time and get that editing done this week. But to kind of keep you updated on what I did is we got all six installed. Two of them were about a week behind the others, about 5 days behind the others. I think it was last Thursday I went through and pulled the queen cages out to confirm queen release. I captured video of that as well. And the schedule today was to do inspection number one on those first four. The temperature today, I think the high is right around 50, 51, somewhere in there. I'm probably going to push that out another day or two. It's not going to be a big deal. I will take a quick peek inside and just see how they're doing on those feeders and maybe top the feeders off a little bit. And that's probably all I'll do for now. But there will be follow-on. I'm going to try to just capture as much of this as I can. Get it up there on YouTube. That way you can kind of follow along at home, you know, and just see what we're doing. And on that note, thank you again for all of the folks who are checking things out over there at YouTube. If there is something that you need, if there is something that is specifically, this again ties into how great it was to, or how great it is to now have bees here at the house again, because I remember a few years ago, someone would say, hey, what are you talking about when you say this? What do you mean by that? And I would literally walk outside, grab the camera, take a quick video, and I could get something on, you know, on YouTube within a couple of hours. So let me know if there's something that you're missing or if I say something that's like, I'm not really clear what you mean there, because we can definitely do something a little bit quicker now that we have some here at the house. All right, let's jump in and stop chit-chatting here. When you have a package of bees or when you order a package of bees, this becomes kind of a convenience type of thing generally, because like for me, there are apiaries, there are commercial places within about an hour and a half or two that I could drive to. I could buy a nuke and, you know, I could bring the nuke home, get it installed and run with that. It's really a great way to go. When you're comparing a nucleus colony or the nuke to a package of bees, they are kind of light years apart in their development. So the 3-pound package of bees is what is pretty typical for a package, which is roughly around 10,000 bees. They've got nothing. They have no drawn comb, no brood, no food stores, nectar, honey. They're just completely empty. They're going to come with a caged queen, a can of sugar syrup, and that's it. I mean, you are literally at, ground zero, very beginning. The nucleus colony, and I've seen, people do nukes in different ways. There's not kind of a fixed way of doing it. But generally, you're probably going to have about 4 or 5 frames. Usually, I see 5 frames. Again, I've seen some people do what they call an 8-frame nuke, which is kind of just a small colony to me. But however you're getting yours, you're going to end up with typically at least 1 to 2 frames that are almost all open nectar or honey. You're going to have a couple of frames that are all brood. You might have one that's a good mix of, pollen brood and everything else. So, I mean, this colony is very well developed, and they are kind of in that pre-explosion mode. And what I'm trying to explain or trying to get at when I say pre-explosion mode, small colonies will grow and ramp up very, very well. All colonies are going to ramp up quickly as long as they're healthy in the spring. When they have a good nectar flow on, they're going to just explode. But those smaller colonies are very deceptive. You can, walk up to a colony, small nuke, and say, okay, this looks pretty good. I see a lot of activity, a lot of bees, a lot of cat brood. Things are going really well here. And you walk up to that same colony a week later, and there's just bees all over the place because all that capped brood has now emerged. They're still in that same cavity. They're still in the same small nuke box. And it happens very fast. Now, what's kind of different is, for me at least, when I've tried to order packaged bees in my area, I can usually get them around late March, early April. That's a pretty good time. I could have gotten them, I think, 2 weeks earlier, around March 13, 15, something like that. In my opinion, that's too early. You've got to have some kind of a way in place to protect them because we still get a lot of cold weather in between middle and end of April. So I don't really like to go that early. Again, your area is different depending on where you live. If you were further south than me, if you were down in South Carolina, Georgia, anywhere in the south, that might not have been a big deal to go ahead and get that, early to mid-March delivery. But I cannot get nukes, or at least since I last bought a nuke, which was a long time ago. It's so nice when you have your own apiary and you're kind of self-sustaining, you just make your own nukes. But last time I bought a nuke, I think the earliest I was getting was late April, early May. So when you look at the development that your package of bees is going to begin and that journey of growth that they're about to start, by the time you get through that first month, you're almost there. So if I'm comparing like a 1 April package bees that I start at my house to a 1 May nuke, by the time we get to that point, that 30 days, my package of bees is going to be about the same size as that nuke. In fact, I knew a guy who part of his yearly beekeeping work that he would do, he would make multiple large truck and trailer loads of package bees from Georgia. He would go down, pick them up at a significantly reduced price, bring them back to our, our area, and then he would install all of those as package bees in his apiary, raise them up to nukes, and then sell them for about twice what he paid. Well, my assumption is it's at least twice as much. We didn't actually discuss the dollar amounts, but I know he got a really good deal buying a lot of packages at one time. And then, of course, being able to turn them into nukes and flip them for, at full retail. And that's not a bad way to go for some spring cash. But you can definitely see just from a high level that you're dealing with two very distinctly different colonies. So let's go right into the install and talk about what that process looks like. The number one thing I want you to do is make sure you have your protective gear. Now, I definitely remember first season, installing packages. I was covered head to toe, gloves, everything. And I was kind of like that for probably the first couple of years. I kind of didn't think that there was even any other option. And I started seeing a couple of other people that were doing installs very casually. They just kind of walked up, shorts and a t-shirt, like, oh yeah, I'm going to install this package of bees. And I'm like, this guy is crazy. This guy's absolutely nuts. But what I've come to realize is, in my experience and what I've observed from a lot of other people, the bees aren't defending a hive. They don't have a space that they're actually trying to defend in the moment that you're doing an install. So that by itself, just inherent to the honeybee, kind of in a non-defensive type of scenario, they're not particularly aggressive. And I started thinking back, I don't even remember the last time that I was stung on a package install, but I know for year one, it's a little scary. And the only reason that I'm saying make sure you're wearing all of your equipment, it's because of, well, I shouldn't say it's the only reason. It's a combination of reasons. One of them is I want you getting used to doing what you have to do as a beekeeper with your protective gear on. You know, the old saying back in the Army days was train as you fight, right? So when you go out to the field, you don't just, you know, wear your regular duty uniform and, you know, little soft cap and go do all the stuff you got to do. And then if you actually go to combat, you put the rest of the gear on. You kind of have to put it all on so that you know what it's like to use it all the time, given the same scenario and circumstances. Same thing here. I want you getting used to having everything on, how it goes on, how it comes off, how you feel. Are you hot, sweaty, gross? Are you not drinking enough water? You know, starting to learn these things earlier is much better than figuring them out when the colony is 2, 3, you know, 10 times the size that they are today. Now, in the video that I did the other day, I was wearing jeans, a button-up short-sleeve shirt, and a veil. I don't mind being stung anywhere. There are places that I really don't like to be stung, but I'm willing to roll the dice, but I'm not going to mess around with my face. I really am not scared at all about doing an install of package bees without any gear on. But I have pictures of me stung on the face before. It's not cool. So I'm not going to be doing that anytime soon. But again, as a new beekeeper, remember, just keep all your gear on, get through it. You may want to consider, instead of the big bulky gloves, this is probably a good time to experiment with no gloves at all. And if you're still uncomfortable and you hear that and you're like, I don't know, definitely look at the videos that I put out this week about installing packages. And you'll see in that video, I'm just moving through, I'm touching bees, I'm pushing bees, I'm, you know, swiping kind of out of the way, and everything is fine. I did not get stung. So definitely worth considering maybe skipping the gloves on that. But again, do what's right for you. Now, the other thing that I always do with packages is I always try to give them a feeder. Now, sometimes the situation, for whatever reason, I just don't have the sugar syrup ready. Something else might have been going on ahead of time. There were some weather challenges that delayed the install of the feeder or the package, and I didn't prep the feeder. You can always bring those in later, but it is important to kind of give them something from the beginning. Remember, they've got absolutely nothing in there. Today's a good example. It's in the low 50s. They will be flying today and it'll be okay. But if it was about 7 or 8 degrees cooler, they would be stuck inside. Well, the good news is they're just going to keep working. They'll keep consuming the sugar syrup and they're not really going to miss a beat. But if they have no feeder, they're just sitting there huddled up trying to stay warm and not a lot's getting done. So I always like to get my feeders filled up first. I'll prep and make everything. I also did a video the other day on how to mix sugar syrup, and I'll put that out at some point as well. It's really, really super basic. That's kind of the first time that I've measured it in over a decade. I don't measure it. I kind of eyeball it. I know you're going to think I'm goofy here, but I basically just kind of taste it. I'm like, yep, that's kind of about Southern sweet tea kind of level, and that's what I do. Now, if I'm just doing regular sugar syrup in the field, I'm just doing the bucket method, 25-pound bag, you know, mix it up, and I'm going 2-to-1. That's just kind of what I do all the time. But if I'm actually trying to get something that's a little bit lighter, a little bit thinner, I just kind of go for that super sweet, you know, Southern tea kind of flavor to my sugar syrup. And I know you're like, this guy's a nut. But anyway, you're going to want to get your feeders filled, ready to go. But also, get yourself a sprayer. It doesn't have to be a real name brand fancy kind of a sprayer, but just a handheld sprayer that you might use if you were mixing up Simple Green or some other kind of cleaner. And you're going to want to fill that up with some of that 1-to-1 sugar syrup. And the reason I say that you're using the 1-to-1 is you do want to make sure that if you've kind of just standardized that you just use 2-to-1 year round, and that's what you're going to do, that's fine. But the thicker syrup doesn't spray well. So when you're using it in a sprayer, I recommend being at that 1-to-1 or even slightly under, maybe a slightly waterier mix, but 1-to-1 is completely fine. What I do with these, and again, you'll see that in the video, but I'm going to go ahead and right before I initiate the install and I'm getting ready to take the top off and start getting to work, I kind of give them a good spray of that sugar syrup. Keeps them busy. It kind of makes their wings and everything a little bit gooey, and they'll kind of do some self-grooming and start trying to get that off themselves. Nice little snack that they get while they're waiting. It just kind of keeps them preoccupied. The other part to it is a lot of bees that are in the package, they're going to be trying to fly out. Like, you're going to open it up and they're going to try to start flying. A lot of them are nurse bees, hopefully, and they've never flown, so they're just kind of walking around. But I like to minimize the number of bees that are just kind of randomly about once I open up the package. So I go ahead and I spray both sides, make sure everybody has a nice light coating of sugar syrup on themselves. And then I go to the top, and on the top of the package, you're going to have a square, which is roughly about 6 inches by 6 inches or so, somewhere in that ballpark. Take the hive tool, get up underneath that, pop that off. Once that is removed, below that, you're going to see a can, and the can is the sugar syrup that they're going to feed off of when they're on their journey to you. And coming up out of the package, past the can and to one side, is going to be a strap. That strap is connected to your queen. So the first thing I do is I go ahead and I disconnect the strap and I get that to where it can freely move up and down. And then somewhere around the midway point in that strap, I usually use a nail to make a hole or, whatever you might have with you that can just make a little hole in that strap. And also a lot of times when you're ripping that off the staple, it'll kind of make its own little hole. But we'll use that hole later on. I just want you to remember about midway through the strap, we're going to make a hole. And I'll tell you about that in just a minute.
Every woman knows the feeling, that quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot, the moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home. That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you, because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.
So now we've got the queen cage kind of suspended there, and then we need to get this can out. Now, for whatever reason, I have no idea why. I don't know if it's a new style of can that this manufacturer was using. I don't know if there was some swelling or contracting of the packages once the can went in. I have never wrestled with cans more in my life. My very first video of the first package I was installing this year, I'm talking my way through it. I'm just like, hey, how's it going? Boom, boom, boom. We're just walking through it. And then we're going to grab this can and we'll just pop this right out. And we'll just pop this right out. We're just going to pop. I mean, it was ridiculous. I just kept going. I was literally like gouging the side of this can with my hive tool, trying to get it to bend a little bit just so I could get, I did finally get it out. There's sugar syrup everywhere. It's all over my hands. It was just a disaster. That has never happened. I have no idea what was going on with that particular can. But of that, let's see, that was one out of the six. I would say like four of the six were really snug. And I started figuring out kind of a slightly different way to attack it. Like instead of trying to, pull up and then wedge the hive tool in and then just kind of get it past that edge and just pull it out cleanly, I started getting a bit more aggressive and just really trying to rip it past the wooden edge a little bit more. I hope I captured that in a video to show you just, a slightly different way of trying to manhandle those things. But I've never had that problem. Normally, you just kind of drop the hive tool in. And the trickiest part of the whole thing is the top of the can. You have to kind of wedge the hive tool down, pop the top of the can up, hold that edge, and then slide the hive tool around the side and pop up the opposite side while not letting go of the first side, and then grab a hold of it with your fingers and pull it out. It's one of those things where once you've done it a few times, it's not that difficult, and it's not a hurry. That's one thing I want you to make sure that you're aware of. when you're doing this, you do not need to rush. The bees have been in that package for 2, 3, 5 days. You're out there in the bee yard. Everything is fine. Nobody's going to, you know, you're not on a clock. You're not, okay, you opened up the wooden outer cover. You have 60 seconds. Take your time. So it was frustrating to me, right? I was irritated because I wanted a nice flowing video that would just be like, you know, birds chirping in the background. Everything's great. And it turned into a big, you know, can wrestling match here. But take your time. Just keep working with it. And eventually you'll kind of figure out, okay, I see what I've got to do here. This will work. And if you wanted to, there would be nothing wrong, you know, those first couple of times as you're figuring it all out, having a little helper there to kind of, okay, you hold the hive tool against this edge while I pop up the other edge. Whatever you got to do, I think I'm definitely overcomplicating it. It's not that big of a deal, but it is something that you just want to be aware of. So definitely watch my videos, somebody else's videos. Watch kind of how that can moves. I think I do have one of them that gives a decent zoom level that I will be sure to include in the video. I won't be able to link that in the description of this episode quite yet because I do have to do the editing. But if you're listening to this anytime after this week, you should be able to go into the description and get a link to the actual install video I'm referring to. But yeah, just take your time. And once you get the can all the way to the top and you manage to pry that out, what I do is I take with my other hand is I just hold on to the strap of the queen cage, pull the can out. If there are bees on it, you kind of have two options here. You can just set it down and just let them figure it out. I usually just give a quick shake just to kind of shake them back to the package where they are. Either method is acceptable. The bee will figure out, you know, where to go next. Now the package is open on the top. There is one step that I left out that I usually do that I forgot about. Once I get to the point where I'm ready to remove the queen cage and I've got them sprayed down with a nice coating of some sugar syrup, I take the whole package and I go to the ground and I just do a quick pop down to the ground. And that just brings all of them from the top of the package down to the bottom of the package. I did forget that part. So once they're down near the bottom, it just kind of gets them away from the entrance. And it helps to, as you're pulling the can up, any of them that might be on the can will hopefully not get caught in the crack between the can and the edge of the wooden package. That's really all it is. Not a must-do thing, but a nice little tip. So now you've removed the can, the can's out of the way, you're holding the queen cage. I then just go ahead and take the queen cage and with my finger, I'll just gently move the bees out of the way. I want to look in and see the status of the queen. The ones I've seen, all six of the ones I did the other day, they were all alive and well, they were anxious. They were running around. They're like, get me out of the cage. I got work to do. I want to go. And they did not want to be in there anymore. But it's important because you want to make sure that you have a healthy queen. Now, there is a scenario that I want to make sure that you are aware of because it'll scare you, it will annoy you, and it will just have you kind of freaking out a little bit. And the solution to that is not going to be what you want to hear, but it's probably the right answer. Again, ideally, you look in, everything is cool with the queen. I have pulled the package out, looked in there, and had a dead queen inside the package. And I think that, I don't know what year it was, year 2, 3... whatever it was early on. And I was pretty upset about that. I thought, well, this is ridiculous. I got this package of bees. Like, why would they send me this package of bees? Why would the queen be dead? What happened? There were attendants in there. The attendants were still okay. There are attendants all around. Like, what possibly could have happened? So I called the manufacturer or the retailer who was selling the package. And I said, hey, man, I got this package of bees. The queen's dead in there. And they told me something that kind of surprised me a little bit. But then when I thought about it, I'm like, well, it kind of makes sense. I can see how that could happen. And they said, okay, this isn't the most unusual thing. Don't worry. Here's what we want you to do. Continue on with the install. Do things just the way you always do. Close everything up and give them like 7 to 10 days to start drawing comb. And then I want you to go look and see if you have any eggs. What tends to happen is if we have this type of situation, usually there was another queen that was ended up, you know, being mixed in with the regular bees that became, you know, the 3-pound package. And she's active and she's moving around and they've decided that they want her to be the queen instead and they've killed the other one. So when they said this, I kind of thought, I don't know. You know, again, I don't know. It was year 2 or 3, but it still seemed a little far-fetched to me. But you know, they're a reputable company. They've been doing this, you know, longer than I have. And I thought, okay, let's do it. And I went back in. I can't remember. I'm assuming it was probably, you know, 8-10 days later. Open everything up, go to the first frame, drawn comb, eggs everywhere. So that's something I want you to be aware of. Now, if you encounter that situation when you pull that queen cage out, go ahead and give them a call, because I want you to at least get that on record with them that, hey, there was a problem and I want you guys to know about it. And then that way they can tell you the same thing, but at least they've made a note somewhere. So if you have to call back again in another week or 2 weeks and you're like, yeah, I just checked again and there's no evidence of any queen activity here anywhere, then they can, you know, do whatever they've got to do to get you another queen. You're going to be in a bind at that point, because let's say that, you know, you waited 10 days or 2 weeks and you discover you don't have a queen, and then they say, hey, no problem, we'll get one in the mail to you, it'll be there in 3 or 4 days. You're pushing almost 3 weeks at this point. I mean, you're like 17, 18, 20 days in before you get your queen. So, you know, with a new colony probably not being able to produce any new brood for maybe 28 days, you figure if you get them installed and then the queen is in the cage for, say, 3 days, and then she takes a day or two to kind of get herself ramped back up again to start laying eggs, maybe around day 4, day 5, she starts laying her first eggs, and then you have new workers, you know, 21, 22 days later. So you're at day 26, 27 when you see your first new worker. Now you're already at day 18 or 20 when your new queen gets there. You give her 3 days to get acclimated. You're at day, say, day 22, 23. And then in a couple of days, she comes out and starts laying eggs. So it really kind of is going to put you behind the eight ball. It's going to be tough recovery. I might even have a discussion with them to say, like, look, can you send me a new package? I'm concerned that most of these bees aren't going to be around long enough. Maybe you work out some kind of deal. But the whole point I'm getting at is you need to look at the queen cage and make sure you've got a good status of that queen before you continue on. So the queen's ready to go and package is ready to be installed. You probably ought to make sure that feeder is in there. Not sure why I didn't tell you that when I was talking about feeding, but I go ahead and get the feeder on ahead of time, or in ahead of time, I should say, unless you're using some kind of a top feeder, which you can put that on last. But I've been using frame feeders for the hives that I just set up the other day. And go ahead and make a space. I usually like to have a space in the middle where the bees are going to go, whether it's a, you know, a deep kind of setup or whether it's a nuke. I like to have at least 3 or 4 frames worth of space so that when you start shaking them in, they've got plenty of room to drop down. I also like to use a frame hanger. This is one of the scenarios where the frame hangers are handy. But if you don't have one of those, just take a box that you've used or designated as like a frame carry around box, which can just be a deep with a solid bottom, or it can be a nuke with a solid bottom, or it can just be a deep or nuke with a piece of plywood you drop on the ground. I do that all the time. Just drop a small piece of plywood on the ground, kind of like a bottom board without a raised edge. Set your hive body on top of it, put all the frames that you need inside of that, cover it up. And then when you're ready to add in any frames you have, for example, I used a frame or two of drawn comb in all these installs that I did to make sure that we could kind of jumpstart them a little bit without making them have to draw up all of their own. But again, if you don't want to use the hanger, use the box. If you don't want to use the box, you can just kind of set them to the side. You just want to keep them off the grass. Don't let them get a bunch of debris and things on them that you're going to then bring back into the hive. So the feeders are in. You have a nice space to put everything. You've got that queen cage secured. Now, how and where you place your queen cage, a lot of people do this very differently. Some people will actually just take a single frame that has no foundation, and they'll put a little rubber band around, you know, the cage and around the queen, or like a twist tie, zip tie. There's all kinds of ways you can do to just secure the cage to the frame. That way it has a nice little space all to its own. And when she gets, you know, released, you can just go back into the hive. You pull the frame out by itself, drop in, you know, some foundation or drawn comb. And, you know, you don't have to go kind of chasing around a cage. Nothing wrong with that. I have seen some people that will just basically drop the cage in, and after they do the next step I'm going to explain to you, they'll just drop the cage in, not worry about it, come back a few days later, reach into the bottom, pull it out. You know, I don't like that because it is a bit more invasive. When I show up for queen cage check day, which you'll see a video of that shortly, I just pop the top off, grab the strap, pull it out, shake the bees off, and then close everything back up. It's a 20-second process, tops. If they've maybe started to draw comb around it or propolize anywhere near it or anything like that, maybe it's an extra second or two, but they generally aren't doing a whole lot with that cage once that queen is released. So figuring out how you want to handle the cage is up to you. The way that I do it, it goes back to that hole that I mentioned in the strap before you take the queen cage out. What I'll do is once I have the cage ready to go in, I'll just insert it in between a couple of frames, and then I slide a toothpick through that hole, and that gives me just enough space to support the toothpick on two frames. Now the queen cage is kind of dangling there, and when she's ready to be released, she'll just, they'll open the door and let her out. Now let's talk about what the door is. The queen cage is going to have two ends to it, and you look right through it. It's got a mesh hardware cloth type of thing that you can look right through and see her. On one end, it's just going to have a piece of cork and it's plugging a hole. The opposite end is going to have a candy block or a sugar block, and it's just a white chunk of candy that is a candy plug, and it's used to provide a little bit of feed for the attendants so that they can consume that and they can feed the queen. And it's just meant to be a temporary thing to keep her contained and give them a little bit of a source of nutrition that is directly accessible between the attendants and the queen. So this is where, when I'm doing my install, I always have a nail, and there is a pack that I wear kind of around my waist. Not right now, it's the beginning of the season, there's not a whole lot going on. But as the season progresses, I'll start wearing this pack every day. And the pack has multiple pockets. I've got queen labels in there, queen cages, queen marking pen, extra hive tool, just a bunch of miscellaneous kind of things that I like to have. But I always have a small handful of nails, probably like, 6 or 7 nails that are always in this pack. I just take the nail and push it in and pop out the cork on the candy side. From there, the candy is now exposed to both sides. It's exposed on the inside to the attendants taking care of the queen, and it's exposed to the outside for any bees within the colony to start eating that and helping her out. Now, my position with this is the queen that is in that cage has been with them, again, at least 2 days. My bees were shipped, I think it was Thursday. I think they got on a plane, flew to North Carolina, took a drive to another location, and I think I got notification around 7 o'clock in the morning that they had arrived at my post office. And around, I think it was 8:30, 9 o'clock Saturday morning, they called and said, "Hey, your bees are here. We open at 10. So for a solid 48 hours, they were with that queen. I have definitely had times where they've shipped out on Monday or Tuesday, and I don't see them until Friday. So, 4 or 5 days. So let's just say that at least 3 days, that colony of bees has had just that queen. That's the only queen they've had any exposure to. The chances at this point of them saying, "Let's take her out and just roll the dice that we're going to have a great life and a great future," is pretty slim. I do know of a lot of people who will regularly, routinely install packages of bees with a direct release of the queen. They will go ahead and pull the cage to the side. They will dump all of the bees from the package into the box that they're using, whether it's another nuke or a full deep hive body, mediums, whatever they're using. They will just dump all the bees in, and then they will direct release the queen into that queenless hive. I don't think that's a terribly bad idea. I still, there's a process that seems to work, and I don't really mess that up. If I had a surplus of queens, if I was doing my own queen rearing, and I had, 25, 30 queens getting ready to be ready for mating within the next week or so, I would absolutely take my chances with that, because if something went wrong with one or two of them, wouldn't be a big deal. I've got plenty of queens off to the side that I can bring in. But in this case, I just leave the removal of the queen to the workers. But what I do is I help them out a little bit. And I'm going to take that nail and I push that candy plug. I go up to the top of one edge, and I just push it all the way in to where it kind of breaks free a little bit, to where if you turned it sideways, you can kind of look through all the way and you'd be able to kind of see the queen from the outside. It breaks up that sugar a little bit, makes it easier for them to get to. It probably shaves about a day off of what it takes to get her out. Once that's done, that's it for me. I leave the plug on the opposite side where the queen is. Now the opposite plug where the sugar is removed. I've broken up the sugar plug just a little bit. I take that toothpick, slide it through the hole that I made, put that between two frames, and then I shake the rest of the bees into the hive. You know, I just kind of take the package left to right and just keep shaking until most of them are out. There's always going to be a few of them that hold onto the package for dear life, and they're like, no, I am not going to go. You cannot make me. And I don't. Once you get the majority of them, go ahead and set the package down right in front of the entrance. Eventually, their stubbornness will be overcome by the desire to be warm and to be with the rest of the colony, and they will work their way up. There will be bees coming down near the entrance. They will be fanning, trying to disperse that queen pheromone, trying to tell everybody, hey, the queen is over here, the Nazanoff, you know, you'll see them in that position where they're fanning and it pushes out that Nazanoff pheromone, which kind of drives them to want to, you know, return to that area. It's kind of a signaling like, hey, here's where you want to be. So you'll see them fanning and putting the pheromone out, and you know, other bees will start walking up, flying up, jumping up and making their way, you know, into the hive. So once that is done, the only remaining process or piece of the process is going to be getting your frames back into the hive. At this point, what I recommend is if you have any drawn comb already, go ahead and get that towards the middle, because that's where they're going to want to be raising brood. That's going to be one of their biggest top priorities early on. So again, frame feeders to the side, brood frames towards the middle. And once you get a brood frame or two in or any drawn comb you have, then just, you know, fill the rest of the space. And when you're putting the frames in, it's kind of normal to have like a big clump of bees in the middle. Don't put the frame in and push down on the bees. Just set the frame in. And even if it's 2 or 3 inches high, just set it in there and you'll just watch it kind of slowly go down. As the bees move out of the way under the weight of the frame, it'll naturally drop back down and settle into place. And as you're filling all of the frames, again, this is something that you don't have to rush. And it's going to be a little scary. I remember this. You got a lot of bees and they're kind of making a little bit of noise and you hear a lot of wings flapping and just a little bit of a hum. And it can be a little intimidating. But still take your time. Go ahead and get all those frames in. Start spacing them out in the way that you want to space them out. And just pay attention to the edges of the frame as you're, you know, setting them in to try not to kill bees that are sitting on those edges. Again, it is going to happen. And it's going to happen a lot more as you're inspecting a much larger colony. And it's just something that is really unavoidable at scale. But at the kind of small scale early on, it's not that hard to just, you know, move your finger a little bit. Bees are completely fine being touched. You know, it's not like you're going to make contact with them and they're just going to become furious with you and attack or anything. Just gently push them out of the way. Now, it's tough when you might have like 300 or 400 of them that are all around that top edge and you're trying to gently push all of them away. I always try to, when I'm getting, you know, that last part wrapped up, inner covers going on, outer covers going on, like I know we're going to lose some bees and I always feel bad about that. But at some point, you're just going to have to accept the fact that you can't really stand there all day. Like, you do need to kind of get things closed up, you know, at some point. But give it a little bit of time. Try and save a few bees' lives if you can. And just wrap up the install by, again, putting on your inner cover and your outer cover. If you are using a cloth inner cover, this is an area where I particularly like the cloth inner covers because I can just slide it on from the back and just kind of wedge, sort of push the bees forward. Nice and slow, get it all the way to the front, brush off the ones at the front, and then pull it forward. And then any of them that still maybe, you know, slid between the top of the hive body and that, you know, cloth inner cover, I can gently push down on it. They'll feel the pressure and they'll kind of move out of the way. And that's what I like to do. But either way, you know, just slide that inner cover. If it's a solid wood one, just slide it across the top and push it, just kind of wedge them out of the way. And like I said, outer cover. If you have a notch in your inner cover, you want that to be closed. You do not want that to be an access point. In fact, you never want that to be an access point. And that's a thing that people like to argue and debate about. You do not want to create a direct access to the top for anything that might want to go in there and cause trouble within your hives. Close that up. The best way to close that is you put the inner cover on and you'll have the notch facing one way or another. I usually face mine to the top because it's easy to just reach to the back and pull that telescoping outer cover towards the back. And that will completely lock down that notch and not let anything get into it. Find a system that works for you. I recommend getting them without the notch if you can, because it serves no real practical purpose within the hive, in my opinion. But if you get them with the notch, then again, make sure you're closing that up so you're not adding another point of entry and something else that needs to be defended. So everything is now closed up. This is where I then label my my colonies. I have my cattle tags. I throw a cattle tag on it, and I don't do any real identification with them at small scale. Like, you know, when you have two, three, five colonies, I just throw a cattle tag on it and that's it. I don't really make a whole lot of individual colony notes unless there is something very specific that needs to be noted. So like this year, I have two Italians, two Caucasians, and two Carniolans. I know which ones are which. And when I do, when I show you guys documentation and things as we move forward, you'll see, okay, these two hives with this hive number are this race of bees. And I will do a different video. I do have a video on how I do my inspections as far as documentation goes. I've also got a couple of guys who want to come on and talk about their software, the software that they use for hive monitoring. I don't really have a position on either of those. If you want to check those guys out and see what you think of the solutions, it's just giving you kind of something you can look at. But I'm still doing the thing where I will record a voice memo, and I might even actually, I might post that whole thing. It's not going to be the most engaging or exciting as far as, you know, like all the flashy stuff that you need to see to get people to stay on YouTube for more than 20 seconds. But what it would give you is an example of the exact file that I would submit into, you know, an AI engine of some sort to do my notes. And if you don't know what that is, there's a video I did. I think it's called something like $17 wireless mic and ChatGPT, never take hive notes again, something like that. Basically, what I do is wireless mic to a little device that connects into the lightning port of my phone. I record a voice memo and I just go up and I say, okay, this is hive number 22. I see a lot of activity at the entrance. Everything looks pretty good. All of the hive components, everything around the hive appears to be stable, intact, and secure. We're going to go ahead and start smoking and open things up. And I just talk through the inspection and I say, okay, I've inspected, you know, frame 4 of the bottom deep, and I'm seeing a lot of this, this, and that. And I just literally talk through the whole inspection. Now, you don't have to. You don't have to say every word. I'm just kind of giving you a little bit of an extra explanation. But you can just be silent, have the record function running, and then say, okay, in frame 3, I see this, and then have silence. Okay, I'm over here at frame 6, and I see that. Or you could just get to the very end of the whole thing and say, okay, I just inspected hive number 22. I saw this, 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 that, boom, 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 boom. And then you go on to the next one with a separate memo. But where the real value, I think, is in all of this is taking that that audio file, uploading that to Riverside, getting a free transcript from it, and then feeding the transcript into the AI platform of your choice and saying, hey, here are these 4 transcripts. I want you to take these and put them into a hive inspection spreadsheet dated with today's date. And I want to make sure you capture the following things with so many rows, so many columns, done. And then it will give you all of it in a spreadsheet, and you can drop that into a file somewhere and save it as a PDF or do whatever you want to do. And then later on, you can incorporate that into another one. So let's say you have 4 of those inspections. You can tell it, hey, break these out by colony so that I can save them into an individual inspection log for individual colonies. The more that you talk to those systems and work with them, the more robust the information can be and the more organized it can be. I just don't write hive notes anymore. It was cool, like when Phoebe and I used to do our inspections together, and she'd be out there writing things down while I inspected, and I would write things down while she inspected, and it was cool. But then we end up with like propolis all over the notes, and things are sticky. It kind of looked like Clark Griswold with you know, in bed there with Beverly D'Angelo on Christmas Vacation, where he's got pine all over his fingers, and everything he touches is just stuck. That's kind of what it was like dealing with those notes. So I really like this digital method a lot, but it only makes sense if you're completely and fully using it. Like, I still have hard copy of my notes. When I maintain remote apiaries, I still take a logbook with me of everything going on there because I can't remember it all. It's just, it's too much and it's too nuanced. Like when you're younger, you know, a lot of people have really, really great memories and it all just goes in and gets locked down. But as you get older, like you just can't, I don't know. Maybe some people can, maybe it's just me. But it's not just, okay, here are these 40 hives and what's the difference between colony A and colony B and how are each one producing and progressing? Like, it's just, there's too many moving parts to just do it alone. So I go through and I tag all the hives. All of them are now labeled. I set the entrance reducers to the smallest entrance size And for my nukes, if you'll see in the videos, I think I did. Let me think. Okay, I actually had to go look at a picture because my brain couldn't figure it all out. I was originally setting it up to be one of them was going to have a divided deep, and I was going to have 2 4-frame nukes on that, and then I was going to build up from there. But what I actually was missing was the divided deep hive body itself. I didn't have any of them at the house. I just had the divided deep bottom board. So I split out the 4 frames to individuals. So I've got 2 4-frame nukes that I installed into, 1 5-frame, an 8-frame Langstroth, and 2 10-frame Langstroth. So the standard entrance reducers that you would use on any Langstroth hive, like that's the same. I put the smallest entrance reducer on those. And then for the nukes, I just kind of eyeballed it and I went and took a piece of 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch just wood that I have. It's from a 2x4. And what I had done before is, you know, 2x4 is 1.5 inches thick by 3.5 inches wide. So I trim off 0.5 inch off the 3-inch side. So it ends up being 3 inches by 1.5 inches. I then make a few cuts on that to where I have a bunch of 3/4 inch by 3/4 inch pieces. And that's what I use for all of my bottom boards, my entrance reducers. So getting those in place is kind of the last step. Now, as far as the package with the bees that's sitting in front, you can leave them there for an hour or two. You know, later on in the day, you can pick them up. I usually just leave them there overnight and move them out of the way the next morning. And for the sugar syrup that is in the cans, I will often, what I used to do is I would take the old can opener, pop it open, and I would pour whatever was left into my sugar syrup. Now what I kind of do is I flip them upside down on a couple of rocks and just leave them outside overnight. If anything wants to drink from them, it can, and then the next day I throw them away. So do whatever you want to do with those, but that's kind of the wrap up. That's, you know, where you left off on the packages. Now I'm going to go ahead and continue forward a couple days before I move over to the nukes, because these are still kind of unique. And there is one thing I want to tell you about that happened to me. I say happened to me as if it was like an incident that occurred to me, but it's more, let me tell you what I did wrong and how I took care of it. Okay, everyone, I hate to leave you with a cliffhanger there, but I need to break this up into 2 episodes. But don't worry, you can pick up where we left off yesterday, and I'll release the follow-on episode 198 tomorrow. So take care, be kind to one another, and remember that I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
Every woman knows the feeling, that quick glance over your shoulder in a parking lot, the moment you grip your keys a little tighter walking home. That's exactly why She's Birdie created Birdie 3.0, a personal safety alarm designed by women for women. Just pull the pin and Birdie sounds a loud, attention-grabbing siren. We are talking as loud as a jet engine at 100 feet to help deter danger and alert people nearby. And the new Birdie 3.0 is even better. It's rechargeable, includes a built-in flashlight, and features an on and off switch, so it activates only when you want it to. No embarrassing false alarms. It's small, non-violent, travel safe, and easy to clip to your keys, bag, or backpack, so it's always within reach. It's also super cute and comes in tons of colors to match basically any outfit, so you actually want to have it on you, because everyone deserves to feel safer. Learn more and get your Birdie 3.0 today at cheesebirdie.com.